Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 101st episode of Declarations of War, starting the road to the 200th episode. Your host for this evening, myself, Alexev Card, faithful co-host Ninja Turtle.
Hey, guys.
And a huge special guest panel. We have Raysek.
Howdy.
Belinda Huafang.
Hello, hello.
Or is it Huafang?
Huafang, yes.
And the legend, former CSM chairman, Celine.
Hello.
Both Belinda and Celine are, of course, members of Mercenary Coalition at the highest levels. Celine himself founding it many years ago. And Raysek is a member of Providence, and he's going to give us a look at the internal workings of the Provi block. So first off, shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to everyone attending the Eve Barbecue in Virginia. It's very ironic that I will be attending said barbecue, fingers crossed, considering my new alliance of membership, but that will make the weekend very interesting. I have a feeling I'm going to be dying very often in all the games of Are You a Werewolf?
Are you a werewolf?
I am not. I am not, never have been, never will be. Villagers for days.
Are you prejudiced?
No, I just think that all werewolves need to die, and I'm certainly not one. That's all.
Sounds racist to me, but... I guess I'll give a shout-out to Waffles and Pandemic Horde. Guys had a good run. Good run at the AT. Doesn't always work out. Caught some tough matches here and there, but... Also, I want to give a shout-out to everyone going to Summer Swarm in Madison, Wisconsin next weekend. I wanted to go. I'm not going to be able to. I really miss you guys, so hopefully see you in the winter.
Raysek, you got shout-outs?
Yeah, I got a shout-out for Hilmar Peterson for his attempt at walking in stations. That would have made my game a little more fun.
Someday. Someday. Fang?
Yeah, sure. I'd like to shout out to all my corpmates in Corelli. Please come to Corelli and buy our drugs. And a big shout out to everyone involved in the Alliance tournament. You're probably very stressed. I know how you feel. Good luck. Have fun.
You don't know! Oh, Celine.
Sure. I'd like to give a shout out to all my corpmates in BDCI who were here in Germany at my house last weekend for the annual BDCI barbecue. There were about 28 people that showed up here. That was quite interesting, considering all the things that are going on in EVE these days. And shout out to Saberay, who could not be with us this evening due to other commitments, but who is currently actually running the current incarnation of Mercenary Coalition. So, hope to see you back soon, Saber. We miss you.
Fang's doing all the work anyway.
This is true on most days anyway, of course.
And of course, a very special shout out to our sponsor, EveBet. Eve-Bet.com, New Eden's premier betting service. Bet on real life sports with ISK. You can bet on the Alliance tournament with ISK. If you feel like you can predict that, I feel like things might be a little different this year, not sure. They've literally handled hundreds of trillions, well over hundreds of trillions in bets since opening. So they're a very trustworthy service. And in addition to bets on the Alliance tournament, bets on the UFC, bets on sports, they also got blackjacks and slots and stuff with more added every week. So check it out. If you want to advertise on Declarations of War, we have a spot available. Contact Alexei of Card in-game. Poll results. We did a little poll. Who did better on the Rome? And only two people voted. I have a feeling it was me and Turtle. I extend my thanks to the audience for not showing their partisanship and for being on Team Declarations of War, because the poll was, who did better, Alexei Card or Turtle?
I did not vote, actually, so...
Oh, look at you.
Did not realize you had this ridiculous poll up.
The other vote was me.
Oh, well, there you go. But yes, I appreciate that, audience. Thank you. They don't want to pick a side, Turtle. Eve news, a lot has happened. We tried to do the show last week, but things didn't come together. So,
I fell asleep, sure, okay? It happened.
Yes, well, I'm sure we've missed some stuff. Some of this might be old, I don't know. But it'll be interesting to talk about anyway. Cloud Ring, there's been a really big sort of shake-up in who owns what in Cloud Ring. There was sov drops by whip my slaves back and forth. And various alliances have moved in. Now, whip my slaves back and forth still has control over, I'd say, maybe a third of the region. Mostly the parts nearest Pure Blind. SMA has taken part of Fade. An alliance called Iron Armada with the rather confusing ticker of Fleep has moved into the part near Black Rise. The area around Placid is now controlled by Lethal Intent. And then the part that's bordering Syndicate, Outer Ring, and Fountain is currently a gigantic clusterfuck being fought over by Black Legion, the OSS, Vega, Whip My Slaves Back and Forth, the Irukandji, and OSS's newest pets, Suddenly Spaceships. And MC, briefly, although I believe we've realized that that space is shit. It's not worth fighting over. But it's certainly very interesting, and kind of a nice little, I would say, brush fire skirmish, the kind of thing that's probably more likely to be common now that we've switched into the Fazi-Sav era. The conflict in Scalding Pass is still raging on, and has in fact spread into the drone regions. Some of the alliances that were combatants have either secured their space or got kicked out of it or crashing on someone's couch, and have begun roaming and attacking some systems in the drone lands. Which is interesting. Scalding Pass, while we were there, was super, super hot. And it's kind of interesting to see some people go, oh, well, this space is too crazy. What's nearby? And they're not really intimidated by the drone region super cap fleet. They're thinking, well, you know, we'll make that fleet jump all the way down here. Let's see what we can do. However, the big fight in Eve is down south, in Delve and Quirius. Many groups are fighting there, including but not limited to Black Legion, NCDOT, Initiative, Confederation of Pizza, Eon, Darkness, and several others. Initiative had dropped on one of NCDOT's deployment fleets, causing extreme losses. However, NC seems to be not slowed by that at all. They're making a lot of SAV inroads into the area, and I believe that is still ongoing.
Yeah, BL's got like more than half a fountain now, too.
Nice. Celine, have you been involved in any of that fighting?
No. I've been pretty much AFK from that part of the game for about the last week and a half at least, because of the barbecue last weekend and kind of recovery. And from what I could tell, when PL initially landed in FSWT down south, there was quite a bit of an exodus of the locals. But there's still a lot of skirmishing going on, but most of it seems to be taking place in like the very, very, very late EU and US time zones. So unless you are an insomniac, if you're in Europe and you're not an insomniac or you have a job to go to the next day, it's been a little quiet.
I mean, just the sheer number of alliances involved are making things kind of crazy, right? I mean, if you take a look at the Quirius Fountain Delve map, it's just ridiculous. You've got
the SOV map looks like a dumpster behind Taco Bell. There's so many different flavors down there. It's just it's crazy.
Darkness, Explicit, Black Core, Illuminati confirmed, new alliances down there. We're not even going to be able to shout them all out. Shortbus Syndicate has taken SOV. Lasers Are Magic. We've got
what?
Fink and
really?
Co. Evoke still has systems, although I believe they're losing them. The Methodical Alliance. We've got Vox Populi. We've got Dangerous Voltage. Let's see, we've got F-Off is down there. Sorry We're In Your Space, eh? Alliance called Too Bad, Easily Offended. Very funny. It's just, I mean, there's so much. There's even more than that is happening down there. And it's all like big roiling clusterfuck, I assume. I have no idea if all these alliances are friendly, which ones are not friendly with the other ones. Several systems don't have any SOV at all. Presumably ex-pizza systems that NCDOT has crushed, but who knows who will move in.
If I remember correctly, some of those smaller groups that you mentioned are actually part of a coalition. I did live in Delve about 7 or 8 months ago, and there were some corporations who left the Kadeshi and Darkness on good terms with the Kadeshi and Darkness. And soon after, when the CFC showed up to try and kick him out of Fountain and the edges of Delve to kick Kadeshi and Darkness, those guys teamed up with CFC. And now I believe after that campaign finished and CFC withdrew, they have their own space, obviously, within their own alliances, but I believe they have a coalition going. So I think it's like, I think it's Lasers of Magic, and I think it was one of the first ones that you mentioned. Maybe Illuminati, I can't remember, but I'll have to check the coalition map.
I just have a feeling that with so many tiny alliances, maintaining any kind of stable coalition is going to be very difficult. Like, extremely difficult. I remember back when AAA liberated Providence and installed basically one alliance in each constellation. Maintaining alliance cohesion was just about impossible.
Oh god, liberated Providence. That's a hell of a way to talk about having your soul burned out from grinding 58 stations or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. It was a good idea, though. And it was working fine until PL decided to attack, and then it was like the first major challenge of the coalition involved, and AAA was not interested in taking a leadership role. So it fell to one of the other alliances to take a leadership role. But one of the other alliances was like, no, you shouldn't be in the leadership role, we should be. And we're going to like split the region in half, basically people that support us and don't want to do anything about the invasion versus you that want to fight it. And everything just sort of fell apart from there. And I could see a very similar thing happening. And the other thing that's been going on is sort of storyline driven. The Amar Navy's been fighting drifter fleets pretty intensely. And there's been a lot of news stories that have come out about the Amar Navy losing fights, winning fights, hundreds of ships being destroyed. I haven't attended a single one of these. But hopefully someone in our audience has. And if you would be so kind as to give us a write-up of how these events were handled, you know, we'd be really interested in reading that on the air.
Yeah, this is basically NPCs versus NPCs. So, interesting things they're doing with the AI. Oh yeah, I know, there's the pod pilot showing up as well.
It would be kind of cool, I guess, to see more like NPC interaction, right? Like, as a way to drive storylines or create content. And, you know, I mean, at this day and age, like, players aren't the only things that can interact anymore, right?
I'm still waiting on sleepers to start blowing up people's POSs and wormholes. That shit still hadn't happened, and I'm upset about it.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet either. There's been a lot of talk about it.
Yeah, it's only been 5-6 years. Yeah, it still hadn't happened
I've
yet.
I've seen it happen in HiSec.
Sleepers?
Sleepers, not drifters.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I've seen a lot of talk in some public channels in-game, rumors that people are saying what CCP are doing is testing their, you know, AI code, and that the next sort of, the next level of incursions after the Sansha incursions is going to be drifter incursions for kind of high-end PvE content. Now, we don't know if that's true or not. It's just some rumors that I'm seeing in channels.
That'd be kind of cool, I guess. I mean, like, the metaphorical raid boss, right?
Right.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
You don't really have a lot of that kind of content in the game. Most of PvE is basically passive in terms of, like, mining and shit, or kind of lower-end AI.
I mean, some of the old 1010 complexes used to have that kind of feel, but players have gotten too good at optimizing for that kind of thing, and now they don't seem as challenging as they used to be.
Well, that's just the thing, is, like, the AI itself needs to be able to adapt to, like, needs to change, be updated.
Alright, Turtle, walk us through the Alliance Tournament. That's the other big thing that's been happening since our last episode.
Yeah, AT's going on. I haven't watched all of it, but I've been catching up on, like, some of the bigger matches and shit. But, it's kind of a interesting format. This weekend had two concurrent streams. Well, actually, today had two concurrent streams, Sunday. the winner's bracket and the loser's bracket were going at the same time. But, I mean, so in terms of, like, comps and stuff, it's a little bit different from last year, but the core is kind of still the same. You're still seeing a lot of teams that are fielding, like, 1 to 2 faction battleships, 1 to 2 command ships, a logistics, either a T3 or a T2, and then, you know, stealth bombers, still super, super powerful at this point, great alpha and projection for a pretty small point cost. Teams like Camel and Pandemic Legion have been using that kind of setup really well. Tech 3 Frigs, great tackle, versatility. They're still a little bit flimsy, though not as flimsy as like Tech 1 Frigates or Stealth Bombers. And they're also a great counter to Frigates and Stealth Bombers, too. So a lot of the Stealth Bomber teams that have gotten beat, it's because you've had, you know, 4 or 5 Tech 3 Frigs on the other side, and they can just get on top. EWAR, obviously, still really powerful. Jams, probably more so than Damps, because a lot of these comps that we've been seeing have the ability to brawl up close, so the Damps just aren't really doing it. But yeah, like I said, I haven't watched all the matches, but some teams to watch that I'd watch coming up. Triumvirate. There's a lot of AT experience actually packed into that Rebirth of Tri, and they've been fielding a really strong 2 Dami, 2 EOS, 2 VNI fleet, which it looks like they're pretty well practiced with it. I just hope they have something else up their sleeve, because it's a pretty easily counterable setup if you plan for it. But they have a match coming up you should watch. Phoebe Freeport Republic, and I can't actually believe I'm saying this. They had a really tough first match against Clockwork Pineapple that I did not expect them to win. They brought out a Balgorn, Vindi, Absolution, Oniros, Deimos with 2 Confessors and 2 Heretics. And they beat a really heavy 2 Tempest Fleet, 2 Vindicator setup that I didn't think they were going to win against. Maintained their composure in Game 2 against Brave Newbies, and they were able to just pick them apart, win on points. They're going to have a tough fight coming up against Nulli, but it's going to be a good match, I think, and so that's definitely one to watch, too. Also, it must be Jelly, because Jam Don't Shake, because that is just, like, probably the shoe-in for the best alliance name of the tournament.
Agreed.
So, I think they're in the loser's bracket at the moment, but if they have a match coming up, so I would watch that, too, because that's just a great name. And the usuals. I mean, like, Pandemic Legion and Camel Empire and Shadow Cartel, like, you know, the big guys are still there.
Very cool. I have not had the ability to watch as much of the tournament as I would have wanted, so I've been doing mostly ops and work while it's been on. But I'm hoping next weekend that'll be a little different, and I can actually sit down and watch some fights.
I'll hype it again this year, just like I did last year, null-sec.com. This first weekend didn't have commentators, so it had ISD volunteers running the cameras, so you still had the same kind of basically style and presentation. You just didn't have anybody talking over it. But null-sec.com has API replays of all the matches. The only thing you can't really see are like effects, so ships that could be rails or could be missiles, you don't really know, but you can still see what's happening and positioning. And it's a great website if you miss the matches to be able to go back quickly and catch up. Nothing, huh? Got nothing from you guys. Come on.
Well, I mean, I was wondering what the ominous silence was meant to signify. The question.
Somebody's
on my mind,
fucking talking.
The question on my mind is, what's going to be the ship of the tournament? In many ways, last year, which was the first tournament I participated in, I feel the ship of the tournament was actually the Orthrus, and somewhat the Heretic. What are your predictions for the ship of this tournament?
I haven't seen that much of the Heretic, to be honest, in play, and when you do, it's kind of a 50-50. Like, Phoebe brought 2 Heretics successfully, and they actually did a pretty good job at what they were supposed to do. But other times, you know, they just are completely useless. Haven't seen that many Orthruses. Barghest has been filling the role in that faction battleship slot pretty effectively when it's used. So, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be, like, the ship, like, the pivotal ship, but it's definitely getting some play. I mean, it definitely has a place.
And what would you say about the points cost of the tactical destroyers? Do you think CCP got it right? Is it cheap? Is it expensive? What's your feelings on that?
I think it's pretty much on point. I mean, you were watching these matches, and people are able to bring, you know, like four... Are you talking T3 frigates? Or destroyers, I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, sorry. Yeah, people can bring... I mean, they're bringing, you know, four Tech 3 destroyers, and you still have that core, that faction battleship command ship logistics core, like, untouched. So, I mean, it seems like it's in a really good balance right now, just the way that the fights are playing out. I mean, people that actually put the numbers together would probably have more of an opinion on that, but it feels balanced.
Well, anecdotally, I was wondering if you could comment on how the T3 destroyers are actually doing. You know, regardless of points, the teams that field them, are they winning more? Or are the frigates holding, are the destroyers actually pulling their weight?
I think it's pretty dependent on what you're coming up against. They're definitely pulling their weight when they're coming up against frigate-heavy teams or bomber-heavy teams. Range and positioning is an issue, and also, like, tackle is a really big issue with those because they're not that tanky. Like, you just can't get that much buffer onto it to where, like, okay, now you have two Macarials and you're webbed by a fucking Deimos, you know? Like, you can't put that much buffer onto a Tech 3, so... They're really coming out strong in dealing with, like, other E-War frigates, other smaller, lighter assets, picking off people that are poorly positioned, and, you know, also hanging back and protecting Logi in that kind of role.
Okay, interesting. Definitely be interesting to see how the meta evolves in the next couple of weeks. And we've seen that with every tournament, right? The meta for the initial couple matches is almost never the meta by the end of it. Except for, like, one or two teams' case.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that core seems like it's probably gonna roll through, but yeah, there's an interchangeable part of it in terms of what else you bring with the other, you know, 40 points you have to spend. And that's what's gonna be shifting. There have been some teams that just completely forego that and bring something else, but that's pretty hit or miss.
I've been wondering, have you seen any unusual fits?
Nothing super crazy. Somebody brought a Nerus into a fight.
A Nerus, really?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Doing what?
It was a Rogue Capel match. Yeah, I have no idea. There was just a Nerus there, and he fought, and he did like 8,000-9,000 damage or something, I think, throughout the course of the match.
Talking about the Galente specialized hauler?
Yeah. That's
maybe did he have like a lot of ammo or cap charges in his cargo hold? Maybe it was like
a
fly boat.
Because he wasn't at range. Like he wasn't skirting. Like warped. He warped basically into the front line.
He was like web scram neating people basically.
I have no idea what it was.
That's how usually you'd set up a comp.
Or if you had a comp that just had that many extra points and you're like, whatever, fuck it, you're gonna give him to the other team either way, right? Like, you might as well squeeze 8,000-9,000 damage or something. But, I mean, you could have picked a better ship than that, but who knows. But that's probably the strangest thing I've seen. Like I said, I haven't seen all the matches yet, but yeah.
Interesting. All right, very cool. Let's continue with the tournament updates in the next show. Speaking of updates, got a big one about Noir. So if you guys haven't been keeping track of our corp info, and your podcast is the main source for all your Noir news, there's been some shakeups. Our alliance, No Not Believing, has been mothballed. As you'll recall, previously, we were down to just Noir and Noir Academy in the alliance. We were faced with a choice. We could continue to recruit corps and go through that grind, which was very frustrating and no one seemed very enthusiastic to do. Or we could try doing something different. None of us were quite ready to retire yet, so we went with the best possible option available, and that is have Noir and Noir Academy in Mercenary Coalition, which had restarted earlier this year. And now we are pretty much getting ourselves acclimated. I mean, we've moved most of our guys have moved anyway. We're getting ourselves set up on the IT. We're getting into some fun fleets and seeing how all that goes. Looking forward to our first contract with the new alliance. And we're currently basing in Syndicate. And our main goals are just to help MC, you know, rebuild itself to the monster powerhouse that it was back in the day. To have fun and, you know, just generally build the best best community of EVE mercenaries that can possibly be built. And to talk about that and to talk about, you know, the process, the reaction, you know, the opportunities of having Noir in the Alliance, we've got two leaders from MC right here, Celine and Fang. And I'm sure Celine has thoughts on this subject because it's something we've been talking about for, like, what, 2-3 years?
Oh, yeah, on and off. It's been, it was really interesting. As I said at the beginning of the podcast, it's a shame Saber's not here because he's really the one that should be doing the talking. But Fang, I'm sure Fang will fill that role nicely. I'll just, I don't want to talk too much about it, really, because my role has been not really as nearly as large as it was in past days. Saber came to me, I think, in about late July. He had been in my corp in PL BDCI for the better part of about 4 to 5 years. I had known him a bit longer than that. And as part of a recruitment gig, he had gone kind of on assignment for the better part of a year, on and off, back into EVE Uni, where some of his deep roots were. And out of that assignment, the corp got about 3 or 4 really good prospects to bring on board. And I think that his experience kind of back down at that level and also, you know, gelling with new people and getting kind of the fire to build something got lit underneath him. So he comes to me and he says, I'm thinking of doing something more along that line on a kind of a permanent basis, but I have all these different ideas and I have this one really crazy idea that I know you're going to say no to because you always say no to it. And he asked me what I thought about if starting up MC again, and if it would be okay with him kind of picking up the flag and running with it. And I guess he caught me at the right time, or hell, I don't know, whatever it was. I said yes, and I think after, you know, he got over his shock for about 30 seconds or so, he's like, oh, okay, so now what? And he, I didn't really pay a lot of attention for the first month or two because I told him I didn't have time, and I really was curious to see what he was going to do. And he jumped in front of it. He got things rolling. They had a few interesting setbacks in the beginning, but they kept rolling forward with his corp, which is Licensed to Kill, and that consists of some old players, a lot of newer players from his EVE Uni days and everything else. But and this is where I will definitely turn over to Fang, because he's got a good eye for what's happened since then. I think that the real turning point for when this version of Mercenary Coalition turned from sort of kind of a weird experiment to see if it was going to work or, you know, not, was when Corelli came on board. Now, Corelli is, for those people that don't know, is a very old corp. It's got its roots way, way, way back in the beginning of EVE. Joshua Fortain, the CEO, I'm probably mispronouncing his last name, but it's okay, Josh doesn't care. He was actually the original sovereignty map maker of EVE back in the day. And I was a bit of a fanboy of Josh and Corelli a long, long time ago. So having a established corp like that join MC was a real boost to the idea that this was going to actually work, that it might actually last, and that there wasn't just a few people that believed that the idea of the MC was obsolete anymore. And from there, it's just kind of, it continues to grow and get better as time goes on. So that's kind of a very, that's the shortest version I can give of the history, of the recent history of what's been going on. And I think that Fang is definitely much more qualified to speak on how things go on a day-to-day basis and such.
Okay, well, this is Fang. I've been a director in Corelli for, I think, just over a year now. Basically, reiterating what Celine said, yes, Josh was one of the original map makers for the political maps of EVE way, way back in the day, in the early years. So that's one of the reasons why a lot of people know who he is and know of his corporation. I met Saber through EVE University just because I've never been in EVE University, but I've always been willing to help EVE University people because of the EVE Uni Wiki, which I used a lot when I first started to learn about EVE and started to get slightly serious and try and work out like what all these chips are and what they do. And there was a period when Corelli was looking for a new direction. As I mentioned before, we were in the Kadeshi towards the end of last year. We were in Delve. And we weren't really enjoying the very large-scale Nullsec blob fights. It's not something that we've done a lot, but we wanted to give it a go, and we did. And we had fun, and it was time to move on. And Saber contacted me. He'd been trying to recruit me for a long time, actually. And I said, look, there's no way I'm leaving Corelli. This is one of the best corporations in EVE. Once you find a great corporation, you stick with it. The only way that you would ever get me is if you got my corporation. And I guess that's where we got talking. And we joined at quite a rough moment because they'd recently had a corporation leave. They had some problems, etc., etc. But anyway, once we joined, things started to pick up. It was slow at first, but we started to attract some other corporations, different time zones. And I had no plans to be involved in Mercenary Coalition or mercenary work or anything like that. And, you know, it wasn't at the forefront of my mind, but through Saber and his belief, we collectively in Corelli decided to choose the path less traveled and try something new. And I would say, honestly, it's been quite successful. I mean, we've had 13, I think, contracts on the books that we've completed so far. Everything from wormhole space, HiSec, LowSec, SovNull. So we've done quite a few different types. I became involved in the negotiations with clients and so on at a very early stage because, you know, basically we were pretty small and Saber was looking for someone to help him. And I don't know what else there is to say really, other than it's great to see the old MC Alliance flag flying in space. Where there is no oxygen. Hopefully with Noir on board now, we're going to really dominate and really have a good time.
And we plan on it. It's already been pretty great so far. Definitely getting along with everyone in MC. Got a good bunch of pilots there. It's clearly a work in progress with a long way to go on a lot of fronts, but I mean, there's clear progress that's been made and continues to be made, so it seems like an idea whose time has come, and it's just a matter of that coming happening.
Oh, there is one more thing I will say, actually, that just came to my mind, which I think was one of the reasons that after we joined, I realized why it was a good decision. And that was Saber said to me when we were thinking about joining. He said, look, when you join, you will be part of the founding of this alliance. I mean, even though it's an old alliance, it's a reboot. So it doesn't matter what happened in 2005 or 2003 or 2006 or whatever. What matters is here and now. And therefore, if you are joining as one of the founding corporations, you are going to shape how we do things. You are going to shape the doctrines that we fly, the contracts that we take and the contracts that we don't take, the culture of the organization, the family, which is a big part of what we're about, the community. So yeah, it's been, that's that aspect, I think, has been one of the reasons why, even if in the first 2 or 3 months we weren't that busy, we were just kind of getting our shit sorted and settled in. People in Corelli have been very positive about it. We only had, when we moved, we had 2 or 3 people leave, and none of them left because of Mastering Coalition. They all left because we told them we're moving to LoSEC. And because Corelli has lived in NullSec for like 10 years, we had pilots who just don't like LoSEC. And they said, no, I'm sorry, I will not live in LoSEC. So they decided to leave. And that was the main reason. But other than that, I think those who didn't leave and who stayed with us, and now, of course, we're back in NullSec, I think they're very happy.
I think that one of the things that Fang touched on that, and of course I'm biased in saying this, is that one of the reasons that MC worked before, is working now, is throughout anybody's playtime in EVE, you reach a point where all the PvP and all of the whatever it is that you're doing is you're gonna come to a point where it's like, okay, well, what is this about? What does this mean? And there's been two driving factors for what made MC successful in the past, and I believe what is going to make MC successful in the future, in this current iteration. And those two things are, number one, it's about the person next to you. And it sounds cliche, but the fact is that the people who are coming on board in MC right now, the corporations that are coming on board, the people that are joining those corporations that continue to grow, this is something that is pounded into them over and over and over, not just by words and not just by flags flying, but by actions, by everyday deeds that people do to help each other and such. Some alliances, yes, there's help. Yes, there's this, but there's a sense of community. There's a strong sense of bonding when you truly do realize that your personal kill board doesn't mean shit. No one cares. Your actions and everything that you do is really about the person next to you. And as long as you're taking care of the person next to you, then it's going to reflect back on you, and it's going to reflect on the alliance as a whole. And as a whole, everyone will continue to improve and move forward and get better and better. And it's not going to happen overnight. It hasn't been happening overnight, but I think the past few months have definitely proven that it is happening, and it's going to continue to happen. I think that the other thing that it's only fair to mention is the game mechanic changes with regard to, you know, the jump mechanics, the, you know, jump fatigue, the nerfing of the ranges and all this other stuff. I think for an alliance like MC, and for a lot of other small to medium-sized groups in EVE, that for all of the pain and risk-cutting that the mechanics have caused, it's kind of been a boon to many organizations with regard to being able to get into fights and not have to worry about somebody from the drone regions or from the other side of Stain or from the ass end of Fountain showing up within 12 or 13 minutes and turning it into the next giant, you know, Asakai shitfest. And that allows for a lot of fights in the 50, 60, 100 person range. And this is fun stuff. And we've seen quite a bit of that, especially since the move to Syndicate. So, as Fang said, the time is right, and now with Noir coming on board as well, who I have always had, I understand this is your podcast, Alec, and I would say this anywhere else as well. I've always had great admiration for Noir and yourself for carrying the mercenary flag as hard as you have over the years, especially during times whenever it was definitely not the most popular profession or the most lucrative line of work. But hopefully, I believe that you guys are home now, and that together everything is going to continue to move forward in the way that it definitely should.
Oh my god, get a room.
Gladly.
I have been accused by certain people in many of the organizations I've been with of being slightly emotional.
You guys are like two drunk teenagers making out on the bus. Like, just get a room.
You're the best. No, you're the best.
Let's go see Taylor Swift together.
Okay.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm happy about it. The only thing I'm not happy about is that Celine didn't give me Mercenary Coalition all the times that I asked for it in the past. But I guess Saber is an okay guy.
Saber, I'll say it's not the first time it's come up from a few different directions. I went to great lengths to keep the Alliance in stasis and away from some of the less desirable elements in the game, to say the least. But it was fun. Timing. Yeah, absolutely. Not at Alec, though. It was other things. But I think it was the wind blowing in the right direction on the right day. And Saber had a plan. He'd been in my corp for a long, long time. He understood the mentality. We've always BDCI has always been kind of a big mafia family for like the better part of 12 years. That's what everybody's just kind of that's the mentality that they have. And so he understands that it's not about skill points so much as it is about the actual person doing the flying. And as long as you've got that, then you can build a family. You can build a community. And that's what the most important thing is. And if you've got that and you've got the brotherhood and you've got the bonds, then you can succeed.
All right. So I'm very much looking forward to succeeding. I think it's going to go pretty well, actually. And we're going to wrap that up and move on to our final two segments. Now we've got Rasek here, and I want to give him a bit of time on an interview because we often talk about Providence here on Declarations of War. But it's rare, for reasons that will become clear during this interview, that we don't actually have anyone from Providence on to talk about the other side of things. So, let's start things off. Rasek, who are you in Providence, and how long have you been there?
I'll start with how long I've been there. I moved on March 1st, 2013, and I've been living there ever since. And I'm basically a merchant trader. I used to do station trading over in Jita. I did that for 4 years when I was being a care provider for my grandma, and then she passed away. Now I have more free time.
Okay. And could you kindly walk our audience through what it was like trying to come on the show today in terms of talking to your Alliance and your Coalition?
Well, I had to write a couple of letters back and forth with my CEO and then go to my Alliance leadership and talk to them and get their permission. And after that, they said I could come on as long as I don't use my full name and I don't name names and, you know, provide intel on my Alliance.
And is it true that you're, in fact, worried that, you know, the Providence Coalition in general, you know, may discover that you had come on the show and take action?
Yeah, they could roast me over a fire, kick me out of the Coalition.
Just setting the stage for the audience here. This is what life is like in Providence. The biggest news in Pravi related to the whole Phoebe, Aegis, Fozzie Sov thing was that the Imperium would throw down and come in there to basically cleanse Providence. They had all this whole RP thing about they were supporting a different emperor and all this other stuff. What was the reaction to that?
Everybody refused to kiss the ring.
Well, obviously, but
that was
can
the
you go into a little
reaction.
More detail there?
No, immediately, like within the first 2 weeks, several people, corporations left because they didn't want to deal with that kind of reality. with an invasion impending. But that was months ago, and everybody that's been there since then has basically just, to put it in a figure of speech, they're sitting on a porch with a shotgun, drinking rum, and, you know, waiting for them to show up.
And they haven't shown up so far, but quite a few other people have. Can you talk about the general war feeling in Providence? Any highlights that you're aware of?
Well, there have been various fleets like FCON and Goom Swarm and stuff, but they're not every day, and you know they're not huge fleets either. So so far the invasion has been underwhelming.
NC Dot had made a sort of pre-invasion invasion. Is that still a threat? Do you guys worry about other large alliances besides Goonsworn that might come in and try to do what NC Dot did?
Not particularly, and we weren't terribly worried about NC Dot either.
Right,
they were mostly
enough.
Just sticking a stick in the anthill and twirling it around a little bit.
And, how have you guys been adjusting to Fazisov? Obviously, you know, things running around doing troll and ptosis is something you hear a lot of the NullSec players bitch about. You would figure Providence would be one of the key places that sort of thing would happen. What's your experience been so far and how ptosis has affected Providence life and Providence strategic concerns?
It's made it actually a bit easier for me and other people. The trolls aren't a real big problem because they're usually solo or maybe they have one or two people backing them up. And so we either kill them or they take off one of the station services and we put it back online. What worries me is if there's a fleet of 60 people or something like that with Intossus links and they're actually trying to disrupt things.
Has that happened so far?
Not to me.
Alright, well it's good to have you on the show, and thank you for this glimpse into the internal life of Pravi. If anyone has follow-up questions, obviously you can't send it to him directly, but you can forward them to me and I'll send them on over. Are we actually doing these quotes that are on the show notes?
I don't know, I'm just typing to put it somewhere.
Yeah, do it.
Oh god! It's interesting. I gotta find a way to merge these photos. So like, about back in my wife has a photo of me back in about 2004 with my son, my baby son, on my chest, like falling asleep and drooling, and I've got my headset on, and I'm like yelling at my screen because I'm FCing an E fleet, and now. Fast forward about 12 years later, well, about 11, 12 years later, my son asks me this weekend, he would like to try Eve. So I'm like, okay, so the day has come. And so we download the client Saturday morning, and I start him on the, it's like, okay, do what this woman says, you know, do what she says. You know, it was quite interesting because the tutorial has changed. And then it's like it, then he crashed for some reason, and then all of a sudden Aura went away, and it was like, okay, what the fuck do we do now? And it was just this big confusing thing, and no one seemed to know like what I was doing. So I'm like on the Eve wiki, and it's like I didn't even know what to do. I was like, ah, damn it, someone told me to push F12. Ah, here's some agents. Ah, good, go talk to these agents. So he started running these little agent missions, and it's quite interesting to see. I mean, this is a kid that's got, he's got like three level 60 characters in Star Wars The Old Republic. So he knows all about clicking buttons fast and everything. So how hard could Eve be, right? Oh my God. Yes, the learning cliff is still very much in existence. But it's interesting. I didn't get a lot done in Eve this weekend on my, you know, on my accounts because I was too busy watching him actually do this, which was kind of fun in a way because I hadn't seen a new character start out in a while, and seeing it through the eyes of someone who had never been exposed to it was quite interesting. And he was completely fascinated by, you know, like orbiting things. trying to figure out, you know, where stations were. One of the comments he made was like, wow, everything is so big. You know, everything's huge here. You know, he thought his ship was huge, and then he zooms out. He's like, oh my God, everything else is really big. And then he got his, he was running missions, and he upgraded from his little noob ship. He chose Galente. He was all about the democracy and the debauchery. And he got his first ship through one of the agent missions. He got an Etron, which he found absolutely incredible. It was he properly fit it with blasters and got in close and started, you know, tearing things up. Eluded a Hornet, was completely confused by the concept of drones. And then he got a Weber, and he thinks that webbing, he literally at one point, and you know, you could hear him screaming in capital letters, webbing things is awesome. He loved it. So webbing things and then blasting them apart with blasters is great. And then after he finished the first 10 like military missions, he's like, oh, I want to try something else. So he starts doing the industry missions. The first industry mission requires you to go out and mine 1,000 units of Veldspar. So he's fired up about this, right? He goes out there, and about halfway through the first cycle, he's like, wow, mining is really fun, I guess. I mean, it was hilarious. So but then he liked the money he made off of it. So I don't know where this is going, but it's interesting to see how the game has changed from back in the old days. Whenever, I mean, hell, he's been playing 2 days. He's already got like 4 million ISK. I mean, I can't even. It took weeks to get that back in the old days. It's incredible to me.
Your first million was a milestone when I started.
Yeah.
Yep. It's. I mean, I remember. I mean. People used to, I mean, like, when I got a Punisher, I was so happy that I had an extra mining laser, you know, and then my friend had a cargo expanded Kestrel, and you know, with the, it was just wild. So, things are very different, you know, kids these days have it so much easier than we did, yeah.
But it has to be even easier for new players, you guys. That's what we keep hearing on the forums.
Well, it's, like, kind of cool that you bring that up, right? Because the game's going to have to find a new source of blood at some point or another. And, like, kids in that age are super pliable, they're super adaptable, like, and if they have experience with video games, like, it's not that hard for them to pick up EVE and, like, start to understand the general concepts of, like, how to do stuff. And, like, I think we think of EVE as, like, a game for adults when, you know, I don't... if that is actually the case or if it even should be.
It's interesting that you bring that up because, I mean, like, as someone who, you know, I mean, I was a dev for about 3.5 years, and this type of thing came up a lot. And even up until recently, I never really thought of EVE as, I mean, like, I think that the last time they released any of this information, like, demographically, the average EVE player was in, like, their mid-20s or something. And I know that I've, you know, run into a lot of people that, you know, started playing EVE in their teens, and now they're in their mid-20s. I think that's probably why. You know, as I said, you know, my son doesn't have a lot of, he doesn't have a lot of time to game, but when he does it like, you know, in these marathon sessions because it's like the only time he doesn't have to do homework and everything. But despite, you know, what he's done in other games, EVE was still quite a bitch to learn. And he's, you know, and he's still trying to wrap his head around how massive and everything is. And the tutorial, and if I hadn't been sitting right there with him, I don't think he would have been able to figure out a lot of things. There's still so many little details that are missing. I mean, you conceivably could go through a lot of these missions and piece a lot of things together, but it goes back to what, you know, is emphasized, you know, in every interview and in every text that's ever been published. If you're really going to get into this game, you're going to have a buddy, or you're going to need to go straight into like a corporate environment, because the scale of everything and all the different options that are available in this game, it is very easy to get overwhelmed. They've come a long way, but it's still not really accessible to people of, like, you know, I think he's 12. It's, that's still not, you know, you're still not going to be able to walk in and do it unless you are just like into self-abuse, which most of us are because we're still playing.
That's a good point. I mean, you raise an interesting option though with the corporate environment, because, you know, I mean, that's an aspect that's also common between all, you know, basically all MMOs that kids of that age. And yeah, 12 is probably a little young, but like the 12 to 15 year old bracket, I mean, shit, I started playing this game when I was 15, you know, I'm in my mid 20s now, you know, right in that demographic. And I think you're right. I think that's what it is. But like there's design choices there that maybe need to be made to make it a little more accessible. But the corporate environment, I mean, it works for us. Like, it could work for them. It's something that's common between all MMOs, and something that, you know, I think they seek is that kind of positive social environment while they're gaming. So, I mean,
well, when I put him to bed tonight, he made an interesting statement, which was that, like, you know, I was explaining he started the industry missions, and the next mission he has, you know, that he's going to pick up on tomorrow is, like, he's got to build something for his agent, you know. He's got to, like, refine the minerals and get the blueprint and build it and everything else. And so, and he understands enough about EVE, like, I mean, from, like, meeting all the guys that came to the barbecue and hearing us talk about it for years and years and years. So right before he goes to bed, he's like, so what do I have to do to start building Titans? Like, oh boy, here it is.
Oh God, he's already thinking about quitting EVE so early.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, it might take you a few years to get there. And he's like, okay, well, I'll give you a discount, you know? I'm like, thanks.
It's interesting that his observation about EVE being very big, based on his experience, and then based on his experience in Star Wars, because
yeah,
I played Star Wars in the beta, because I'm one of those people that whenever a new MMO comes out, I'll always try it. You know, I always want to see what's out there. And one of my observations was it's the smallest sort of feeling MMO I've ever played. The maps are tiny. So yeah, I mean, after that, EVE must feel extra big.
SWTOR is I understand exactly what it is you're saying. The maps feel tiny up until the point where you have to run all the way across them, and you can't fast travel.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in awe of like, I mean, it's interesting. I'm in awe of a 12-year-old and the fact that he's managed to grind up, like, you know, 3 level 60 characters. I mean, they've got all these new bonuses now and all this other stuff. But even so, it's the scale of EVE is still something that is completely unequaled out there. I mean, not just, I mean, the single shard environment and all that other stuff aside. I remember the first screenshot I ever saw of EVE back in like late 2002 when it was still in beta was a Bantam undocking from like a Kaldari station. And I mean, it was like this little speck compared to the station. And up until then, I think the big MMO back then for like space games for a brief time was Earth and Beyond. And compared to the cartoony looking bullshit of Earth and Beyond and then the sheer size of it, I mean, I saw that and I was just like, holy shit, this is big. I gotta get into this, you know. And then, you know, I started playing EVE, you know, literally right after it went live, and I was a beta tester again for the next 2.5 to 3 years, you know.
It's fundamentally, too, it's different because it's not like a WASD game. Like, the principles of movement are all just completely different than, you know, almost all other MMOs that you're going to play. So it's definitely a disconnect there.
Oh my god, yeah, the click fest. That was the one thing. Like, trying to steer his ship, and I'm like, no, you have to click this and you have to orbit and everything else. And he's just like, what? That's what?
Probably one of those things that EVE will eventually have to go in and redo, but that would require like such a fundamental rewrite of all the gameplay. It'd be crazy. But it's probably something that eventually needs to happen, along with the multi-threading rewrite and all that kind of shit.
Is it something like a first-person thing? Like, sitting in your ship, like, I don't know if I'd want that.
There is manual piloting now.
Yeah, so I mean, you do have some degree of it. It's
not very
not as though. Intuitive, yeah, as yeah. It could be, but
there are definitely some third-person flight simulator conventions they could probably do to adopt.
Like a follow-behind cam would be kind of cool, you know. And then that would make manual piloting like somewhat
exactly.
sensical.
But I think I speak for everyone, Selene. We would love to have another update from your son's exploits next week. I think that'd be fun. We're going to move on to our final segment. A little bit of Merc news besides the big shakeup of No Not Believing shutting down and MC becoming by far the largest mercenary alliance in the game. Our psycho ex-girlfriend, Suddenly Spaceships, has some exploits. They took Sov in Cloudring, or not, excuse me, they took Sov in Geminate, quickly got kicked, and now have moved to Cloudring. So I guess they thought they could do something by themselves, and remembered that they couldn't. And then now they're crashing on the OSS's couch, which are the old syndicate goons that they're friends with. And they're doing alright for themselves. They seem to do really well when they're partnered up with a larger, more capable alliance. So, props to them. And unfortunately for them, though, they also had a bit of bad news as well. They were ejected from Merc Contracts channel for scamming. As most people that listen to the show know, Merc Contracts, while, you know, it's not as, like, super active and rigorously screened as it used to be, at its core is a channel for mercenaries that don't scam. So when employers go and they see a Merc Contracts channel Merc, they know that they can trust that mercenary, can give them their ISK, and that it's going to be cool. Apparently, Suddenly Spaceships doesn't fit that mold anymore. They decided to take a scam, and it's a bit disappointing. They had a bit of a scamming history a long time ago and had swore off it for a while, but it seems like they're back to old habits and are not mercs anymore. Or at least not mercs that are mercs in the traditional give them money and they'll do what you actually gave them money to do sense.
The listeners want the grisly details.
I know, I don't have them, unfortunately. People are being tight-lipped about what went on. As soon as I get more information, I will share it with you. But you can be assured that they still wish Gnar was in their alliance, because they renamed the station they took in the duality test.
I saw that.
For us and for in Cloudring, OSS gave them a station. And they renamed it after us. It's very, very nice of them to keep thinking about us. Even though we haven't been in their alliance for like 8 months.
I missed this. What'd they name it?
Go ahead, Fang.
Isn't it Never Not... Just Never Not Believing or something, or...?
Yeah, it's something like that.
Oh, okay.
And the first one was like, still better than Gnar. And then we turned around and took the station from them. Us and PL. We reinforced it, and then PL took it. We couldn't beat PL off the nodes, unfortunately.
Oh, you meant on duality. Okay.
On duality,
And anecdotally, I mean, I know this is Eve and you're not meant to trust anyone, but if you're talking to me about a contract, you know that you can trust me. I would never do such a thing. I would never scam you. We would never do that. In fact, again, this is anecdotally, so you don't have to believe what I'm saying. But in fact, a few months ago, we were doing a contract in LoSEC where the targets of our contract, so the people we were hunting and killing, they tried to contract another group to fight us. And then that other group came to us and said, look, we don't really want to fight you. How about we split the money? Now, I think the other group was obviously trying to scam us as well, I think. But, you know, we obviously would never... Even if we were 100% sure that we were going to get that money, we wouldn't take it. So if you're our client, we will not work against your interests.
Do you want to name and shame that group? Because that's pretty shady.
Who was it? I think it was the guys that live in Uli, actually. Yes. They used to be in Dead Terrorists. They no longer are.
Oh, is it disbanding as we speak?
Yeah. No, was it them or was it... Actually, I forget what I said, because I can't quite remember, and if I can't remember, I don't want to...
That's the only former Dead Terrorist Corp I know of. But interestingly, they are in Suddenly Spaceships, so... I don't want to actually say that they're related, because...
They recently joined Suddenly Spaceships. That's right. Yeah, no, it is them. It is them. It's those guys that recently joined Suddenly Spaceships that certainly recently used to live in Uli. I don't know if they still do.
I wonder if that's related. Maybe... Disbanding as we speak did got suddenly kicked from the channel. That would be interesting.
Don't know.
Well, as we get more information, guys, we will bring it to you. But that is it for Declarations of War 101. Go to our website, declarationsofwar.com, to join in on the show poll. Leave a comment on the episode. By the way, get in touch with me for supporting the podcast with an advertisement. We reach a lot of listeners. If you want to get your service, your corp, your product out there, let us know. And you can reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir. We are recruiting, although our recruiting processes are shaking up a little bit, so if you decide to drop an application into our forums, make sure you let us know either by email or in the channel so we make sure to check the right place. So we're currently undergoing a little bit of an IT transition. And that's it, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Good hunting, listeners. Shot me down.